This is a Cincy Fan Talking with LP. You can catch me on Twitter. That's a Cincy Fan Talking. You say it like it sounds, just leave off the G. If you have ideas for the show, you can reach me at Cincy_FanTalk@yahoo.com. If you have any suggestions for the show, make sure you leave them there. Who knows, you might find yourself as part of the show. Any feedback would be definitely appreciated. And also, make sure you hit the Linktree page that's on my Twitter. Make sure you click on that. You can find all the different ways to contact me there. Enjoy the show. What is going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of A Cincy Fan Talking with LP, and this is LP. Welcome back. Thanks for checking me out. Really appreciate it. As always, make sure you click on the link tree, especially if that's what's got you here. Click on that. Make sure you check out all those causes. Share it if you can. Definitely appreciate it if you could do that. So, one love on all of that stuff. It's been a wild week. I really feel like all of these weeks are going to be wild until we get past Election Day, for real, for real. So we just got to kind of hang in there until we get through this. But, I mean, saying until we get through this, that's kind of relative, real talk. So if you're out there listening, just kind of hang on, because it's real out there. On a good note, if you're a Lakers fan, the Lakers pulled it out. They got more than what they bargained for. Honestly, I think a whole lot of people didn't expect the Heat to give the Lakers that kind of a run for their money. I thought it was going to be Lakers in five, for real. I didn't think the Heat would show that kind of a fight. But real talk, looking back at it, we probably should have expected the Heat to do what they did. We really should have. I mean, if you look at what they did to the Pacers, and then you look at how they handled the Bucks, and then you look at how they handled the Celtics, they beat three really good teams. The Pacers were hot, and they knocked them off sweep. And then they beat the Bucks. And, I mean, if they weren't one of the best teams in the league, then you're tripping. And they knocked them off. And then they beat the Celtics. Good squad. Knocked off the Raptors. So, you know, they was a good squad. So, I mean, the Heat, they wasn't no bums. I mean, the Lakers, they beat a good team. They really did. I mean, me talking, I feel like the Heat didn't deserve to lose the way that they did in game six. But the best team won. The Lakers were the best team in the league, and they deserve to win a championship. So hats off to the Lakers. I'm not going to say they did what they were supposed to do, because I feel like that would be underselling what the Lakers did. And that's kind of the topic of this. This is twofold. We talking Lakers, and then we talking NBA. So, well, really, we talking LeBron, and we talking NBA. What the NBA did as a whole is absolutely amazing, and I don't think it can be undersold. Adam Silver really did his thing, and everybody around Adam Silver from the top down really did an amazing job as far as letting the players have a voice, keeping the players safe, putting a good product out in the midst of a pandemic. I mean, you go down the checklist and everything you want from a league, the NBA delivered. Now, if you saying the NBA is the only league that did this, you would be a bit mistaken. You can look at the NHL as another model. You can look at women's soccer as another model. The Friday Night Party, check out that podcast, by the way, real dope podcast. Follow at Bereft on the Dow. real cool dude. Check him out. He kind of put me on to this. Women's soccer did an amazing job as far as being able to keep everybody safe and being able to let the women put out a strong message about racial injustice. I mean, they did a really good job. So it's not just the NBA that did it, but the NBA has such a big stage and they use that stage. And you got to give them their props for that. You really do. I feel like a lot of leagues could learn from that. And this is the thing, and this is what's really bothering me about this. We're getting to the point that we're so starved for sports that we're just accepting, okay, you finished. You got through your entire league schedule. So congratulations, you did it. Woohoo. And it's not really like that. That's not true. Okay, you got through your league schedule. Okay, you're playing some games. That doesn't necessarily mean you're a success. You're not a success story. The NBA success story, NHL success story, women's soccer, NWSL success story. Would you call MLB a success story? I mean, when you look at the league as a whole, would you call what's going on now a success story? I would say no. Okay, true, they got through the league schedule. But having to condense it to 60 games, and then on top of that, all of the massive outbreaks, and then you have teams that couldn't play all 60 games. And I mean, it was an absolute fiasco when you're looking at it. When you really think about it, it was kind of sort of a mess. It really was, if we're being honest about it. They did finish. You get props for finishing. But to call it a success and put them at the same level as an NHL or women's soccer or NBA, no, you can't really do that. And I feel like the same thing is happening with football. College, we kind of saw that coming, but pro, definitely. Because, and I've been saying this since the pandemic started. If you've been following the podcast from day one, you've heard this countless times. The NFL was the one league that kind of felt like they were bigger than the pandemic. Nothing really stopped with the NFL. Everything was full speed ahead. They were kind of like, look, you know what? We're just going to keep going until something stops us. Something's stopping you now, and they're still going like nothing's stopping them. They're literally just moving games back 3 or 4 days with contagion just running all through teams, which literally makes no sense. You're not keeping your players safe, you're not putting out a good product. If you're only pushing games back 3 or 4 days, it just doesn't make sense to me. And you can tell that the players are kind of like, do you really care about us? Or do you care more about getting your games in? Which one is more important to you? And you're gonna start seeing pushback. I mean, at some point you are. And I feel like people are just so starved to see sports that they'll just take it. And at some point, it's going to be like, okay, we finished. We finished the schedule. So, yay, it's a success story. And it's really not. A success story is you're able to keep your players safe. The players can have a voice. And you put out a strong product. If all three of those things happen, it's a success story in my book. If one of those three things are missing, then it's not as much of a success story. If you're missing two of those things, it's kind of a failure. I mean, it really is. And if you're missing all three, then you really shouldn't be playing at all. That's really how I see it. And number one, you have to keep the players safe. Nobody wants to do anything if they're not safe. Relationships are formed like that. If you're not safe, you don't want to do anything. And I feel like that's where the NBA made their headway. They ensured that the players were going to be safe. And that's how they got their strongest product. The NHL did the same thing. They ensured the safety of the players. That's what the bubble does. It ensures the safety of the players. It gives you the strongest product, and it allows players to have a voice. That's what the bubble was all about. If you're not going to have a bubble, it's going to be really, really difficult to have a season uninterrupted. You're asking for interruptions if you're not in a bubble. So, NFL, prepare for more interruptions. I mean, you're dealing with a contagious virus. What do you expect? This is just what it's going to be like. But as far as what the NBA did, absolutely perfect. And it allowed us to see the Lakers be crowned champions, which was absolutely awesome. The LeBron haters are going to come out as they do. I spoke on this last week. It's absolutely ludicrous to hear the LeBron haters, to see the LeBron haters all over Twitter talking about, oh, well, he's been to the finals 10 times and he's only won four. It's laughable. This man literally makes it to a team, and that team is finals worthy. I mean, who does that? Well, he doesn't win. He doesn't win. Okay. Sure, he doesn't. Right. If he doesn't win, how are we having this debate? If he's not a winner, how is this even a debate? It makes no sense. Saying that doesn't even make sense. So at this point, the argument is he's not better than Kobe. He's not better than Jordan. This, that, and the third. And these arguments will get settled probably never because it's different eras and it's really hard to compare different eras. To me personally, I feel like LeBron is one of the top four basketball players I've seen in my life. Definitely top four. Magic, LeBron, Jordan, Iverson. Top four. And we can throw more in there, but we're talking those four. That's where I am kind of with mine. But another weird argument, and I won't call it weird. I think it's actually a pretty good argument. Was this the toughest championship that LeBron has ever won? And for me, the answer is yes and no. I feel like it's both. It's kind of like a cheating answer, but it's really not. It depends on how you want to look at it. If you want to look at it outside of basketball, if you want to take everything, sorry about that. If you want to take everything, this is easily the hardest championship that he's ever won. If you want to take everything outside of basketball and include basketball, you have to deal with everything that happened in January when Kobe and his daughter and seven other people lost their lives in that plane. The Lakers had to come together in the midst of all of that tragedy. And then after that, this virus comes and wrecks the entire season. They have to deal with that. And then after that, social unrest just comes and turns everything over in the middle of a pandemic. So then they have to deal with all of that. This is before they even get in a bubble. And then once they get in the bubble, it all kind of happens again. And they're dealing with all of this in the middle of playing. For them to be able to come together and still keep it tight enough, keep their core together, and win a title is absolutely amazing. And it's very easy to say, well, everybody had to deal with it. Well, evidently, they dealt with it the best because they won. So we could say this was the hardest one for him to win. I would argue if we're talking strictly basketball, then there is no way that you can say that the hardest one wasn't him coming back with the Cleveland Cavaliers down 3-1 against Golden State. A 73-9 team that made it to the finals, and his team is down 3-1, and they come all the way back to win the title. That's unprecedented. That never happened. So, if you're asking me which one was the toughest to do, which one was his hardest one to win, I would say, how are we judging it? If we're talking strictly basketball, then it's easy when he was with Cleveland. If we're talking on a broader scale, then it's easy, the one that he won this year. So the amazing thing to me is that he's able to play with different styles, with different players, in different conferences. And he's still able to get it done. I mean, that's absolutely amazing to me. Like, I feel like it's something to be celebrated. And all of these weird arguments, oh, you have to have a super team. Google any championship team, just Google one. Look up and down a roster, guaranteed. You're looking at a couple of Hall of Famers. You're looking at three or four all-stars easily. There's two teams that I can think of that don't fit that mold. 2011 Mavericks, the Detroit Pistons team that beat the Lakers. Those are the only two teams that I can think of that don't fit that mold. Every other team, super team. Well, what about the Lakers back in the day? Super team. What about the Celtics? That super team. What about Jordan's team? Super team. Like, and there's nothing wrong with it. Like, in order to win a championship, you cannot do it by yourself. You can't. Like, Jordan showed us that. You need your squad with you. LeBron showed us that. You do, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's part of the game. That is the game. You need players with you. You can't do it by yourself. So this whole super team debate is just ridiculous. So props to LeBron, props to the Lakers, props to the entire NBA. I can honestly say, and if you heard the pod, from about a couple of months ago, I was a little back and forth about them doing it. I was like, I didn't want the message to get lost. So I was like, I understand them going back. I'm a little concerned about them going back. But I'm really glad that it happened because the message never got lost in translation. Like they were loud and proud about everything they wanted to talk about. The basketball was great. The messages were even better. So props. to all of the players. Props to the Lakers, props to the Heat. It's great basketball, great messages. So, we really appreciated it. So, thanks a lot for it. Cincy Fan Talk with LP. We'll be right back. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. Thanks for sticking with us. Back with the Cincy Fan Talking with LP. And of course, this is LP. So, been doing the virtual teaching thing for, I say, a solid couple of months now. Had like a 2 week period where we kind of let everybody get their feet wet, and then we started up strong early September. And the wife, she's a teacher as well, so we've pretty much been doing the same thing, like, you know, separate rooms in the house. I'm in like one room, she's in the other room. I'm doing my thing, she's doing her thing. Kids doing their thing as well. And it's been such a strange experience. It's like you're teaching, and sometimes you're always teaching. There's that. And it's like it's really strange, because once you start, like once you get in the mode, you have like these moments where it feels just like the classroom. And then in the same like 5 minute stretch, it'll be these modes where it feels nothing like the classroom. And it's still strange to me. Like, teaching over the computer isn't the strange part. Like, I mean, I feel like I've been teaching long enough to where like I can pretty much teach anywhere. Like, it really makes no difference to me where I teach. I mean, put me outside, it really doesn't matter to me. I mean, I'll teach anywhere. It's just really strange, like the interactions. It's the relationship building. That's the part that's the strangest for me. I feel like I spend most of my day talking to little circles with letters in the middle, and I'm talking to just like profile pictures. I feel like I'm teaching on Twitter for like a long stretch of the day, because a lot of the times kids aren't showing their faces and things like that. And I mean, honestly, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I don't really see anything wrong with that. But it's just strange. Like, because you're so used to seeing the kids, you know, you're used to having those interactions with the kids and just getting used to teaching in a different way. And as human beings, we're adaptable. And I feel like that's the thing that a lot of people kind of take for granted. You know, everybody's kind of up in arms, like, you know, how can we do this? How can this ever happen? You know, we're not going to be able to teach this. We'll be able to do it. It's just that period of getting over the weirdness level. And once we get past that part, I feel like it'll be fine. But it's just still there, because you've been doing things a certain way for so long. I just really hope that this whole pandemic thing, I just hope it brings to light the fact that there's so many inequities still in teaching. They've been there for decades. Like, they haven't gone anywhere. And I feel like the pandemic just put like a big, gigantic spotlight on the haves and the have-nots, and the places that were ready to roll and didn't miss a beat. You know, they were able to just run their entire bell schedule because kids already had computers. They were already taking them home and everything. And then you had districts who basically just had to take home paper packets because they didn't have the supplies to do that, and they're just now getting those supplies. And I mean, I feel like it's wishful thinking. I mean, you see the way government is ran, so I feel like it's going to be a long time before we get to that level where everybody's on the same footing. I mean, honestly, We may never get to that level where everybody's on the same footing. But I mean, I feel like people are understanding now that one district doesn't look like another district. And honestly, that's because of how it's funding. I mean, that's simply because of the funding. As long as funding is run strictly through home tax dollars, it's going to look like this. I mean, think about it. Your school district is only as good as the neighborhood that is around. Everything is driven by home values. The better the houses look, the better the school district looks. Simple as that. So you pretty much knew who was ready to roll with this virtual learning thing just by looking at your school district. I mean, just by looking around your neighborhoods, you pretty much knew who was ready to roll. And it's sad to say that, but it's been true for decades. It's been true for a very long time. So the thing about it now is getting kids to class, which is really, it's tougher to do now than it was before, which is weird because they have class right next to them. But you'd be surprised how much more difficult it is to motivate a kid to get stuff done when it's harder to reach them now. Like, we have the tools to reach them more, but we really don't because we don't see them as much. If that makes sense. Since we don't see them as much, we can't really stay in their faces and let them know what they need to do. I'm consistently sending messages, you know, through all the different ways that we can, but you know, if they don't pick up the computer and read the messages, I mean, what can we do? And that's the frustrating thing, you know. At the same time, though, if this is the safest way to get things done, then this is the safest way to get things done. I mean, if it has to be this way, then this is the way it has to be. So, what can you do? I mean, as a teacher and as a parent, it's, I won't say it's frustrating. I mean, I'm coming from like two different sides. As a teacher, I'm seeing that there's, how do you put this? I think I got it. I don't see the same outpouring of support that we saw in March and April. It's kind of like where everybody is with the whole mask wearing and the awareness of the virus. It's kind of like people are getting tired of talking about it. So now it's kind of like people are getting tired of throwing their support around this whole, you know, teacher thing the way they were back in March and April, where it was all you heard on the news. Now it's kind of like, okay, we're back to normal with this teaching thing. And now it's anything but. We kind of need that support a little bit more than we did before, because we're trying to get back to normal with teaching, but life isn't back to normal. So we're trying to run like entire bell schedules through a computer. And that wasn't the case in March, and that wasn't the case in April. There was a whole lot more leeway back then. It was kind of like, you know, get it done when you can, you know. Now it's like we're doing this the way we were doing it as if it was a regular classroom. But it's not a regular classroom. But everybody's being held to that standard. I'm okay with that. As long as everybody else is okay with the fact that it's going to look different. It's not going to look the same. People have to be okay with that. Like, The way you knew school changed. And people have to be okay with that. If you're not okay with that, then you're going to be upset. I had a talk with every single class I had the first time they logged on. And I'm like, look, things are going to happen this year. Your computer's going to log off on accident. You're going to try to present your screen and it's going to freeze up. You're going to turn in an assignment and it's going to disappear. All types of strange things are going to happen this year. It's okay. It's cool. We'll fix it. It'll be fine. Don't worry about it. We got you covered. Like, we had to have these talks because they're kind of freaking out. They're like, I don't understand. I don't know how to do it. And I'm like, it's cool. It's all right. We'll take care of it. And I feel like a lot of different places aren't having these discussions. And they're like, it's full steam ahead. We expect everything to be business as usual. And it's not business as usual. And I feel like that's the biggest problem. We're trying to jump right back to where we were. But we're not even in school. Like, we're not even in, like, there aren't even a lot of schools that are in 5 days a week doing their entire bell schedule. So there has to be some type of give here. I know it's not March and I know it's not April, but everything's still happening at rapid speed. And there's no telling when things are going to kick up again and we're going to be right back to where we started. So, with this whole teaching thing, I just kind of feel like people just want to get right back to it. They just want to get like, okay, I want things right back to normal. But it's not. Like, patience is what we need. And I'm constantly telling that to the kids. Like, look, just relax. All right. We'll get there eventually. But until we do, you have to be okay with things being a little bit not normal. We'll try our best to make it as normal as possible, but don't consider this the new normal. Consider this what it is right now. Consider this school. Because that's what this is. This is school. Until we get back to school, this is school. So we have to treat it like that. And I feel like that's been my virtual experience. That's what it's been for me. The constant battle of just kind of understanding that this is what it is. And just being patient with the process and understanding that this is life right now. This crazy, chaotic, weird thing that's going on all around everybody in our household. Like, that's what this is right now. So, until, I don't know. Like, just until, because who knows what the end date is? I mean, nobody really knows at this point. I feel like way back when this first started, people felt good saying, like, a month or 2 months, but at this point, it's kind of foolish to put end dates on things, especially things like this, because the people running this stuff, they have no clue. I mean, hell, they're catching it. So it's wild out here. Stay safe out there. Protect yourself, protect the people around you. That's all you can do. And on that note, we pretty much out of here. Make sure you check the schedule, check us out. We up every Tuesday, so make sure you listen, subscribe. Until then, as always, life is good. Peace out.
If you're not ready for the conversation to end, I'm not either.
Make sure to catch me on Twitter. That's the Cincy Fan talking. Leave off the G at the end of it, and we can keep the conversation going. Also, don't be afraid to hit that subscribe button so you can catch the next episodes. The episodes will drop every Tuesday. If there's a change in that, I'll make sure to let you know. Appreciate the support. As always, life is good.